So we've been discussing the Bodhisattva practices, particularly here the Bodhisattva vows, as guidelines that help us steer our energy in a proper direction in this life so that we can really act for the benefit of others. And so this last group of precepts from number 35 to 46 is specifically to eliminate obstacles to the ethics of benefiting others. Okay, so we talked about first couple of those, to avoid not helping those who are in need. In other words, when people need things, to help them, and not kind of make up our lazy excuses and find 10 million other better things, i.e., more pleasant things that I want to do. as excuses why we can't do it. Number 36 is avoiding taking care of the sick. And so again, there, the mind that often we avoid taking care of the sick, not only because it's too much trouble and we're lazy, but because somehow their illness reminds us of our own mortality. And because we don't want to look at our own mortality and look at the essence of our own life and at the transience of cyclic existence, then we just want to avoid people who are sick, basically as a way of avoiding what part of our own experience is, which is that we have a body that will get old and sick and die. So when we find ourselves in situations where our mind is really avoiding taking care of the sick, instead of like building up lots of defenses and excuses and reasons why we can't, just to sit down on our cushion and look at what's going on in our mind and really be honest with ourselves. Because if we can kind of tap into that fear of suffering that we have ourselves and really acknowledge it, then it ceases to be so terrifying and so fearful. And instead, you know, as we really think about the Four Noble Truths, we recognize this is the nature of cyclic existence. And recognizing this is exactly the thing that gives us the juice and the energy to our practice. Okay, so just instead of feeling overwhelmed by that fear, then using that to really energize our practice, because it shows us how important it is to, you know, follow the three higher trainings and to really purify our mind and gain the realizations that will lead to liberation and enlightenment. Okay, but we can't transform it if we can't acknowledge it, if we can't face it. You know? And so that's why when we feel that resistance in ourselves, when, you know, we don't want to go near sick people or take care of them, to look at what's really going on in our mind. And then number 37 is not alleviating the suffering of others. Okay? So here again, you know, people have suffering, problems, or difficulties of one kind or another. They might have physical difficulties and be blind or deaf or paralyzed, have mental difficulties, either in terms of retardation or different mental illnesses. They may have economic difficulties or social difficulties. They may be looked down upon, they may be lost their job, they may be lost their social status, maybe their family has been shamed by the whole community, or a scandal has broken out. So people suffer from, you know, incredible number of different things, you know, either being abused by others, or they suffer from their own guilty conscience from having abused others. Or, you know, people live in fear and suspicion and paranoia. I mean, there's many different kinds of suffering. And so here, whenever we can, you know, if we have the skills and the ability, then to help when we're able to. Of course, you know, this precept is not saying that we have to become Mr. and Ms. Fix-It. Okay? Bodhisattva precepts are not, you know, we shouldn't use it to fall into our American habit of let's fix everything. Yeah. It's real interesting when you come back here after living abroad, how we have this idea in this country. Well, I'm sorry, problems just shouldn't exist. I've got to get in there and fix the situation. It can't be like this. I'm going to go in there. I've got my cause, I've got my thing, I'm going to raise all hell, and we're going to fix it, and it's going to be all okay from now on. Amen. Yeah? And we kind of have this attitude, you know? And it's like we feel if we don't have this attitude, then we're completely lazy. And so we vacillate between these two extremes of, you know, I either have my cause and crusade and I'm going to fix everybody else's problems, even though I can't even fix my own and I don't understand theirs, but that's beside the point. I'm still going to fix it, you know. Or just we fall into the other extreme of total despair. I can't do anything. The whole world's screwed. Okay? So we vacillate between these two extremes. And I think what Buddhism is saying here when it's saying, you know, as much as possible to alleviate the suffering of others is, you know, to have some kind of wisdom there and just go slowly, look at the situation. What really is the suffering? What is the cause of the suffering? What actually is the remedy to it? Because sometimes we fix the external symptom, but we don't change the root cause. You know? Sometimes all we can do is fix the external symptom. Sometimes, you know, we make it worse by fixing the symptom and not looking at the cause. So we have to, you know, really kind of go slow and really assess things and recognize that we can't, you know, kind of march into something and create a new world order. Yeah, I mean, it just shows so clearly in our national policy, doesn't it? Yeah, we're going to create the new world order. You know, we don't ask other countries for input on what they would like that new world order to be, you know, but we just kind of go in there and we want to fix it. And in the course of it, we've, you know, had several blunders along the way. So, you know, the acting to remove the suffering of others is a different kind of attitude, you know, than just fixing problems because we can't endure them. It's, you know, really understanding what's going on, having some kind of, yeah, this understanding that goes together with the compassion that will really see the possibilities of the situation. Yeah? And recognize that often changing something requires an incredible amount of time. You know, that it isn't a matter of making a new law or giving somebody a loan or, you know, setting up a new school that's going to change all the problems in a community or in somebody's life. But it's going to really take time and support from many different directions. But here, you know, what this vow is referring to is, you know, if we're capable of it, we have the time, we're not doing anything that's crucially more important. We have the capability, the resources, then, you know, without falling prey to either laziness or pride or anger, then giving the help that we can help give. Sometimes, you know, like if we have a grudge against somebody, then when they want help, oh, I'm sorry, I can't do that. You know, we feel so good. We have our own pat little excuse why we can't help somebody who, you know, once has slighted us. Yeah. So that kind of thing would be a transgression of this guideline. Then 38 is not explaining what is proper conduct to those who are reckless. Okay, so that when people don't understand what is ethical behavior, what is unethical behavior, when people don't understand what is conducive and beneficial for happiness and what isn't, then to try and help them as much as we can. Now, in a previous precept, in number 16, we had not correcting one's own deluded actions or not helping others to correct theirs. So there seems to be some similarity between that one and this one, not explaining what is proper conduct to those who are reckless. And again, different teachers have different ways of interpreting the difference between these two. And one teacher says that number 16 is referring to correcting people's disturbing attitudes and pointing those out to the people, whereas number 38 is concerned with more their behavior externally. And yet another lama says that, has a different take on it, and says number 16 is more concerned with specific, really heavy actions that somebody is doing that cause suffering, whereas number 38 is more just kind of reckless actions that don't cause that much severe suffering but do create kind of minor problems and chaos. My own feeling about the wording of the vows is that number 16 is referring, again, to things that a person is doing, you know, whereas number 38 is referring to when people don't even know, you know, kind of what's beneficial and not beneficial. They're just kind of like this. And so giving guidance, and particularly here, I think in guiding the young people and in guiding children and adolescents. And so this vow isn't just, you know, going in and jumping in and telling people how to run their lives or giving unwanted advice, but it's rather thinking how to communicate with people. What is a good way to give people advice so that they can use it to reflect on their own actions and improve them? And this is really hard in the West. I mean, especially here, we do not, I mean, look at our own lives. We don't like anybody to tell us what to do, do we? Yeah? I mean, as soon as somebody comes and tells us what to do, what do we do? Who are you? Mind your own business. Pot calling the kettle black, is it? You know, I mean, we don't like to be told anything. We do not like, even somebody with compassion comes and tries to point out some, you know, incredible gross mistake or negative karma we're doing. We don't want to listen. We get really angry and upset and defensive and, you know, tell them they're bossy and pushy and they should mind their own business and, you know, and everything like that. And so it can, you know, if we act like that and we're Dharma practitioners, then what about other people who aren't Dharma practitioners? I don't know, maybe they act better than us. Yeah? But, you know, if you look, I mean, our own minds sometimes are so tough. And so, of course, you know, if we're like that, if we try and help others, you know, very often in this culture what we meet with is people with very tough minds who are basically just like us and don't like to be told anything. And so it's a very delicate thing in, you know, how to explain proper conduct to those who are reckless. You know, if it's an adult, then you have to really think of how to do it, yeah, and how to be skillful. I asked in the monasteries how they do that, you know, like if one monastic is misbehaving. I asked some of the Tibetans, and what they do is, you know, sometimes they can go and, you know, if there's a close relationship, just tell the person directly. And sometimes what they do is they just kind of go and they talk generally to that person and say, oh, and this person over here is doing blah, 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 blah. Kind of pointing out that behavior in another person without pointing it out that that person, him or herself, is actually doing it, you know? And so that's a way of getting it across. Or, you know, talking in a group situation and leaving everybody to get it themselves. Or, you know, using, you know, some of the skills of assertiveness, but with a lot of gentleness and really, you know, owning things ourselves. So it requires a great deal of skill here. But basically this one is, again, out of, you know, apathy towards another person or anger or laziness or pride or whatever, then we don't try and show them, you know, a path that is good for their own welfare. And really here for kids, I think it's really essential. And since kids don't often yet have the, you know, don't tell me how to run my life attitude, although they generally get that quickly if parents are a certain way, you know. You know, if parents let the kids run the household, and the kids do, they rise to the occasion. But I think if, you know, especially with kids, to really explain things to them, you know, why we do things, help children look at, if you do this, what's the result? And if you do that, what's the result? You know, so that kids really begin to understand and develop their own wisdom. Yeah? And so, again, you know, sometimes in Buddhism we think, oh, well, we become Mickey Mouse bodhisattvas and think, well, I've just got to make everybody happy. So, you know, that means I can't discipline my kid because whenever I discipline my kid, they become unhappy. So I'm just going to give them everything they want. And that's not very compassionate towards a child because then they become like us, completely spoiled and unable to function. You know? So I think that it's... I'm joking, by the way. But, you know, I think it's really beneficial here, you know, to guide kids and really get them to think about things, you know, not just let things go. Do you have a question?
It's about knowing itself.
Well, sit down on our cushion and try and figure it out. Yeah? Or just share the dilemma with somebody else. Yeah, I mean, it depends very much on the situation and who it is and what's going on. But sometimes it's just helpful to share with another person about, I'm really stuck, you know, I look at it this way, I look at it this way. What do you think? You know, what are other factors? And I think that's when, you know, Dharma friends can be really helpful for us.